It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it has popped back up to 36 degrees. Fair skies, calm winds, 10 miles of visibility at the airport. It's a beautiful day. The Weather Service is, in fact, calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day and the rest of the week. Snow is likely on Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Tanner Crab season has begun. There was a pipeline leak on the North Slope over the weekend. And Petersburg's Borough Assembly is looking at signing letters of support for fisheries all across the state in the face of years of hardship. That plus the winner of the Copper Basin 300 Sled Dog Race. It was a close one. But first, national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The top Republican presidential candidates are heading to New Hampshire after last night's Iowa caucuses, but as NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reports, they didn't all go straight to the Granite State.
After his victory speech Monday night, former President Donald Trump went to New York for the opening of the defamation case brought by the writer E. Jean Carroll, who has accused him of rape. In an earlier case, a jury already found that Trump had sexually abused Carroll. Trump will hold a rally tonight in the town of Atkinson, New Hampshire, and tomorrow in Portsmouth. Former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley is also holding rallies here today and tomorrow, hoping for a strong finish against Trump. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis went straight to Haley's home state of South Carolina for campaign events today. He and Haley have been battling for the non-Trump vote for months. He will then pivot to hold New Hampshire events today and tomorrow. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
A U.S. defense official says the Navy has carried out another strike against Houthi targets in Yemen. NPR's Greg Meyer reports this comes amid a new report of a Houthi attack that has damaged a commercial ship.
In the latest round of attacks, the defense official said the U.S. carried out a pre-dawn strike that destroyed four Houthi ballistic missiles that were intended for use against ships in the Red Sea. However, several hours later, the Houthis did launch a missile that hit a Greek-owned commercial ship. The ship suffered limited damage. No crew member was injured, and it continued on its journey. The U.S. Navy has now carried out several strikes against the Houthis since last week. U.S. officials believe this is reducing, though not stopping, the Houthi attacks. Greg Myrie, NPR News.
Millions of people across much of the U.S. awoke to heavy snow, freezing rain, and record-breaking temperatures today. The Arctic blasts produced wind chills as low as minus 40 in some areas. The National Weather Service says dangerous wind chills and record-setting cold temperatures continue for the center of the country. Meanwhile, snow will accumulate across the eastern Great Lakes and northeast corridors through today. More lake-effect snow downwind of the Great Lakes are expected through midweek. U.S. stocks ending the day sharply lower. Here's NPR's David Gura.
Stocks sank at the start of a shortened trading week. Shares of Spirit Airlines fell by more than 40% after a federal judge blocked JetBlue's purchase of Spirit for $3.8 billion. Meanwhile, public companies continued to update investors on how they did in the last quarter of 2023, and Goldman Sachs performed better than analysts expected at the end of what was a tough year for the bank. Wall Street's optimism the Federal Reserve is close to cutting interest rates is starting to fade. In a closely watched speech, Fed Governor Christopher Waller said he doesn't see why the Fed would move as quickly or cut interest rates as rapidly as it did in the past.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's Tanner crab season started yesterday at noon. The Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative, which represents the fleet, agreed to ex-vessel prices between $3.50 and $3.70 per pound with the island's processors over the weekend, according to fishermen. That's a bit more than the price last year when the season was delayed due to a stand-down. Fishermen were initially offered $2.50 per pound, but negotiated their way up to $3.25 per pound. Prices were a record of more than $8 per pound in 2022. The guideline harvest level this year is 3 million pounds, one of the biggest in decades. That means this year's harvest could have a value of over $10 million when the season ends. This year, 130 vessels have registered to fish tanners in Kodiak's fishery, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Trident Seafoods also confirmed last week it would buy tanners this year after announcing last month plans to sell its Kodiak facility. There was a pipeline leak on the North Slope over the weekend. According to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the leak occurred on the west end of a 22-mile pipeline that runs from the Point Thompson unit to the Vidami pad. DEC on-scene coordinator Kimberly Marr says Point Thompson operator Harvest Alaska LLC responded to a leak detection alarm on Saturday night.
And they immediately began shutting in and depressurizing the pipeline. And so those swift actions have stopped the release from the pipeline.
Marr says Point Thompson is unique in that it produces liquid natural gas condensate, a kerosene-like oil.
It's a light yellow liquid, not that viscous, heavy, crude, dark crude that you think of when you think of the North Slope.
Marr says it's not known how much gas condensate was released at the pipeline leak site about 35 miles east of Prudhoe Bay.
By the calculations, the maximum worst-case discharge would have been about 11,550 gallons.
Marr says an area 20 feet by about 220 feet was sprayed with the gas condensate, which was at a temperature of about 20 degrees Fahrenheit when it was released from the pipeline.
It fortunately did not melt the snow, so it has stayed sort of perched on the snow on top of the tundra.
Marr says that should enable more effective cleanup, adding there's no known wildlife in the area. She says Harvest has stood up an incident management team that includes representatives from the DEC as well as other state and federal agencies. She says response equipment and personnel are being mobilized to the North Slope, and a plan to clean up the spilled gas condensate is being developed.
It's too soon for me to say how they'll be scooping it up, but they do plan to pick up the contaminated snow and move it off-site.
Marr says tracked vehicles are being used to access the site, and stormy weather is forecast. As far as the cause of the leak is concerned, she says it occurred at a pipe joint and is still being investigated. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will look at signing letters of support for fisheries across the state in the face of years of hardship. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has this report.
Petersburg's Borough Assembly will consider sending a letter to the state of Alaska requesting a disaster declaration for four Southeast Alaska fisheries. Mayor Mark Jensen drafted the letter. It requests declarations for the northern southeast herring spawn on kelp fishery, the southeast herring gillnet fishery, and the southeast red king and golden king crab fisheries. The herring gillnet and red king crab fisheries haven't been open in years. Most spawn on kelp fisheries remain closed, except for the one near Craig in southern southeast. The region's golden king crab fishery opens every February with very limited harvest goals. The draft letter claims the local fishing fleet is buckling from low salmon returns and prices from processors. It says it has, quote, stretched our commercial fishing fleet to the breaking point, with many boat owners unable to pay their crews their full share at the end of the salmon fishing season in 2023, end quote. The letter also laments state decisions to close certain fisheries for years on end, or allow them to open at a very low catch level due to low stocks. The state has issued similar disaster declarations for 14 Alaska fisheries over the last 6 years, the letter says. If approved, the borough will send the signed disaster declaration request to Governor Mike Dunleavy. But the assembly isn't just looking to the state to solve the Alaska seafood industry's woes. They'll also consider signing on to a resolution to ask the federal government for more help and consideration. The Pacific Seafood Processors Association and the United Fishermen of Alaska are compiling a list of suggestions to the federal government to help improve the global competitiveness and resilience of the Alaska commercial seafood industry. If the assembly signs the resolution, the borough will send it off to the governor and U.S. Representative Mary Peltola, as well as U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. Currently, Petersburg is not a member of United Fishermen of Alaska, and Mayor Jensen is asking the assembly to consider joining the group. The organization's mission statement is to promote and protect the common interest of Alaska's commercial fishing industry, and it supports initiatives to promote quality standards, develop new fisheries, and increase efforts to market Alaska seafood. Annual membership will cost the borough $350. If the assembly votes in favor of the resolution, Petersburg will join UFA's long list of community-supporting members across the Alaskan coast, which includes the Aleutians East Borough, the City of Cordova, the City of Hoonah, the City of Seward, and the Kodiak Island Borough. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Brent Sass claimed a second win in the Copper Basin 300 sled dog race in Glen Allen yesterday.
There they are, the 2024 Copper Basin 300 champions yet again. Brent Sass and Wild and Free Mushing, there he is, kicking in hard.
Cale Casey webcast the finish live and asked Sass, who previously won the Copper River Basin in 2022, about besting second-place finisher Jesse Holmes by just 2 minutes to capture another victory in the challenging 300-mile sled dog race.
You guys both look like you're having a great time.
Oh, it was great. I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way, to be honest with you. It's fun competing against Jesse. Jesse's a great competitor, and I mean, we were doing it the whole race, so it was back and forth. So yeah, it's cool to be here first, but it's fun to race Jesse for sure.
32 mushers started the Copper River 300 Saturday. Sass and Holmes were followed by Cody Straith in third place. In the tundra village of Nunapichuk, many buildings aren't safe anymore. Receding into the soft ground as the once frozen foundation of the town crumbles. In the second part of this four-part series, KYUK's Sunny Bean has a look at the effects of permafrost melt on public infrastructure.
The law enforcement building in Nunapichuk sits on the shore of the dynamic Johnson River, which runs through the middle of the village, and the building is right on the shore. The riverbank has eroded to a foot away from one of the building's silts.
I do hope they get a new boardwalk for this. It'll make it easier.
That's Nunapichuk Village Police Officer Alex Tobaluk. The law enforcement building is small and gray, with jail cells in the back and printed signs tacked up, banning cigarettes for prisoners and social visitors for staff. It houses the local police, fire department, and search and rescue team, a crew of four. They boarded up the entrance they used to use to access their boats, because of the erosion. Now they use a side door that leads to a haphazardly constructed dock. It's janky, narrow, and missing pieces, pieced together with loose nails and spare boards.
Especially when we have an intoxicated person bringing him here, like, because that boardwalk is narrow. Like, I always get worried they might, you know, fall into the river because it's so small.
Tobaluk said it can get particularly dangerous in the spring, when the river is cold and water is high. It overtakes the dock and gets the village police officers wet on their way to emergencies.
If they trip, like, you know, especially having handcuffs, you can't use your hands to prevent you from getting hurt. So I do hope they fix it so that anybody won't get hurt.
Tobaluk said the police are nervous about the eroding shoreline, which is destabilizing the building's foundation. A bed of sandbags makes a fortress between the water and the grassy mud beneath the building. At this point, a stack of planks waiting to become boardwalks is serving a second purpose, propping up the building's horizontal structural beams.
and then they kind of throw them to the side, kind of like right there, and they pick them up, and they use like jacks to lift the building up and add more to the side. So we get problems with the building because it's shifting really bad. Like right there, they added more blocks.
New Nupachuck law enforcement wants a new building, but they're not the only ones. The tribal office and post office are also sinking. Light poles lean precariously, and a fall of even one could cause a village-wide power outage. In 2018, the Moravian Church fell off its stilts with a crash during the summertime Salmonberry Festival. It was the fourth time the church had to be rebuilt. Morris Alexi is a resident and is vying to relocate the village.
It was kind of like the main eye-opener, main indicators that the very ground that we are making a living on was changing.
Wherever any construction or buildings have been, there's now plots of dark, mushy mud. That land is unusable. It can't be stepped on, let alone built on again. One of the issues with building on the tundra is it's already a loose material. Up into the 1960s, local people moved each season and used natural materials to build with, which didn't test the soil like modern infrastructure or leave harmful chemical byproducts.
In the springtime, they would migrate to where they knew they would catch some food that they could gather. And then in the fall, they would move to some different area to gather again for the winter.
The community settled in New Nupachuck mostly because of the school, but also because of the church. In 1976, the state mandated Alaska Natives attend local public schools with the Molly Hooch Act. That law was passed because of a case for better local education brought by a student from Amonic and a student from New Nupachuck. The state chose this spot for New Nupachuck's new school because it was the best place to build a port.
It was very strictly required by the U.S. government. They were strict. They were strict enforcing, forceful, that we get our education.
But less than 50 years on, the school isn't holding up well either. Anna Tobolok Memorial K-12 School is third on the list of the state of Alaska's capital improvement project priorities. So far, the state has allocated over $45 million for major renovations, ground reinforcement, and chemical hazardous materials abatement. This school year, students in New Nupachuck started back at school remotely because the back ramp of the school building fell off, revealing flaky, rotted wood. The school is overcrowded, too, currently at almost twice its capacity and with almost 100 unhoused students. Residents say many of those students live with extended family.
Out of our 750 regular people that live here, two-thirds are 18 and under. How much more houses they're going to need?
On top of overcrowding and problem-ridden buildings, outdoor spaces, where people used to spend much of their time, are increasingly unsafe, too. The shrubs, moss, and small bushes that defined the rugged ground have given way to spongy mud and grass, threatening the historic subsistence lifestyle. In the next part of this four-part series, KYUK will look at the effect of the changing tundra on life outdoors in New Nupachuck. Till then, in New Nupachuck, I'm Sunny Bean.
A recently released investigation finds that the state's Adult Protective Services Office failed to properly respond to reports of an elder unable to take care of themselves. The elder died of hypothermia in their home in 2021, according to the report. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The nearly three-year probe was conducted by the Alaska State Ombudsman. One portion of the two-pronged investigation focuses on the way Adult Protective Services prioritizes cases. The agency's policy requires workers who receive reports to prioritize them by need. High-priority cases that pose an imminent risk of harm should be responded to within 24 hours, according to the report, while lower-priority cases require a response within 10 business days. According to the investigation, a concerned neighbor called Adult Protective Services in January 2020 to report that an elder had limited heat and was relying on their car for warmth. Another report filed in October said the elder's roof was caving in and there was no heat. Ombudsman Kate Burkhart says Adult Protective Services assigned both reports a low priority.
We were concerned about that. I feel like if somebody calls and says, Kate is going to freeze to death, maybe that should be a priority one. So we investigated and determined that those should have been screened differently.
The report's second major conclusion finds that adult protective services did not act quickly enough to protect the elder. Burkhart says the investigation found the elder was living in squalid and dangerous conditions, hoarding animals and household belongings. She says the agency did not follow up on a plan to help the elder find safer and healthier housing. She says the agency determined the elder was able to make decisions for themselves, despite their obviously unsafe living conditions.
And we found multiple opportunities to actually help the vulnerable adult that were missed over the 2 years from 2020 until the person's death in 2021.
Burkhart's office offered 8 recommendations to the Department of Health, which administers adult protective services. The report recommends better training for the agency's employees, a limit on the number of cases assigned to each caseworker, and 3 new positions aimed at ensuring elders get the care they need. According to the report, the Department of Health fully accepted 6 of the 8 recommendations, but pushed back on 2. The report also recommends that adult protective services rethink its tendency to favor elders' independence over their health and well-being. Burkhart says that especially when they show signs of mental illness or self-neglect, like hoarding.
The agency prioritizes personal independence, and that's a value many of us have. Another value we have is taking care of our elders, and there was tension between those values in this situation.
In a statement to Alaska Public Media, the state's Deputy Director of Senior and Disabilities Services said Adult Protective Services is working on solutions. She added the agency takes all reports of harm seriously and works diligently to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of Alaska's most vulnerable individuals. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
The Supreme Court won't weigh in on Apple's Epic Challenge. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute. Justices turned away appeals from both the video game maker Epic and Apple over its App Store practices. That leaves in place a lower court's ruling that Apple's App Store is not a monopoly, but that it must allow for in-app purchases using other payment methods. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging world leaders to continue supporting his country financially as it fights Russia's invasion. Zelensky told the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, that increased hesitation in the West could prolong the fighting. Anti-poverty group Oxfam says the world could have its first trillionaire within a decade. It's urging governments to institute new taxes on corporations and the wealthy. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/sustainability.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 16th day of January, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 9:40. It will set again at 4:58, just about 5 p.m., giving us 7 hours and 18 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a gain of 3 minutes and 20 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 46 degrees set in 1979, and our record low was minus 2 set in 1934. Currently 36 degrees under fair skies. They have calm winds at the airport and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies through Saturday and partly cloudy skies overnight tonight with a low of 34. Northwest winds 15, turning to about 25 tonight, and turning to the north tomorrow, coming up to 20 or 30, gusting to 45. And those winds are expected to continue through tomorrow night and finally come down to north 20 to 25 on Thursday. Speaking of wind, Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak. Are off to 15 nautical miles offshore. Gale warning for tonight and tomorrow. North 20 today, seas to 8 feet. Variable 15 becoming north 30 after midnight tonight, except north of Dangerous Cape. North winds just increasing to 35 knots, seas to 9 feet tonight. For tomorrow on our east side, north 25 increasing to 35 in the afternoon, except north of Dangerous Cape, north 35 increasing to 45 in the afternoon, seas to 10 feet, and for Wednesday night, north 40, seas to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for Wednesday, northeast 20, becoming northeast 30 tonight, seas to 5 feet, building to 7 feet tonight. For tomorrow on our west side, northeast 30, becoming north 40 in the afternoon, seas to 11 feet. For Wednesday night, north winds to 45 knots, seas to 16 feet. Tonight is the night they're having the planning for life's changes, and this time it's about tips and trips, tricks for organizing important documents. It's being put on by the Kodiak College in the Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. It's part two of a four-part series, and in this part you learn how various ways to organize your important documents, whether you use old-school methods of pen and paper or are completely digital. This class is for you. You'll talk about what kinds of documents do get organized and options for organizing them. Change happens whether there is a fire, a tsunami, retirement, serious illness or injury, or end of life. Start the new year off right by getting prepared for any of life's changes. And that is going on tonight between 6 and 8 p.m. at Kodiak College. Go to the Benny Benson Building, room 129. All ages are welcome, 18 to 108. Tomorrow night, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers, also at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is calling all Kodiak's agricultural enthusiasts, including chicken farmers, ranchers, growers, and gardeners. There will be a talk about the challenges of agriculture in Kodiak and the solutions people have developed. That's happening Thursday, February 1st at the Kodiak Public Library from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. You'll be talking about future workshops that would be helpful as well, and also brief introductions to programs available to assist agriculture producers in Kodiak. That's all happening between 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Thursday, February 1st at the Kodiak Public Library. For more information, call 907-486-5574. And very exciting, the Kodiak Middle School Drama Club is presenting The Outsiders, adapted by Christopher Sergel from the book by E.S.E. Hinton. That's happening February 2nd and 3rd, so Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. in the Drama Pod. And that's $3 for students and seniors and $5 for adults. Again, The Outsiders, February 2nd and 3rd, Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Drama Pod.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.